Hi, everyone, and welcome to Human Centered. I'm Nick Brunker, a Group Director of Experience Strategy at VML and your host for the show. Thanks for giving us a listen. Amidst all the technological advances, new innovations, and a growing wealth of data we've witnessed over the last few years, one thing has remained the same. CX and marketing is still all about people. With consumers truly in the driver's seat in how they engage and buy brands, commerce has become central to the overall brand experience and CX journey. Our guest today is here to chat more with us about why and how leaders need to be on the front foot when it comes to embracing advances while not losing focus on what really matters, the humans we're serving. I'm so excited to be joined today by VML's Global Chief Commerce Officer, Beth Ann Kamenkow. Beth Ann, thanks for spending time with us today. Welcome.
Thank you, Nick. It's great to be here with you.
Of course, it's been way too long since we've had a chance to sync up. And for those that haven't had a chance to meet with you, share a bit more about what you do here at VML.
Well, we've got the new VML, right, Nick? The merged VML, which is the largest agency, although we won't just focus on size. We're going to focus on the quality of our practice capability. And today that is a deep dive into all things commerce. So I'm the Global Chief Commerce Officer. I also get to lead our New York office.
And you teed it up nicely with the come together of all these huge superpowers across brand experience, customer experience, and commerce. What an exciting time to be not only in our company, but in the industry at large.
I completely agree. And I do think that part serendipity, part intentional design, that our three main practice areas of commerce, customer experience or consumer experience, and brand experience are uniquely coming together in an integrated fashion, which is at the heart of what is powering modern marketing today.
You've written a lot lately about this topic. A few of those articles we'll post up on our podcast page, but you've said AI might be becoming more of the head, but humanity remains the heart for a lot of our pros in the work that we do in our space. What should we be thinking about as we try to stay, quote, about the people with such advancements in tech, machine learning, et cetera, becoming so ubiquitous these days?
Well, in the space of commerce, we like to use this expression that the consumer is the product now. And I think that just helps us realign all of our organizational structures, all of our insights, all of the different teams within our companies to think about the consumer at the heart of everything that we do, not just the product. We can't be product-centric in the way that we used to be before. We have to be constantly responding to the changing needs and expectations of our consumers. And so I don't think that's anywhere truer than it is in that moment of commerce and where we're driving conversion with the consumer. And so it's in that environment of commerce that I really love to put that consumer back front and center and really think about that human-centered design around that person who is shopping and buying us.
And while we're also combating the rapid evolution of changing technology tactics like we've talked about, we're also up against kind of a generational shift as Gen Z becomes even more impactful to brands' bottom lines. How has that changed the game for what you and leaders like you do every day?
Well, I think one of the big shifts that we're seeing is the power of influence, not just for influence, but for the creator aspect of that, because I think we have a very creative generation. As we see that get even skew younger into Gen Alpha, I think they're generation that wants to kind of co-create with brands as much as they also want to see creativity come from their peer group and from others that are influencing them to discover and to trial new product. And I don't think we can downplay how significant that is in how we think about buying today. And it cuts across categories, vertical sectors, and even the de-influencing aspect of that too. You know, when you really think about the influence factor and the power that these individuals have and the relationship that they have. So even when we know that sometimes some of these folks are sponsored and more we're seeing that, or that they're kind of really pushing you right into shopping and into your shopping cart, it has become so familiar and so critical in how we think about the channels of shopping that I think that's one major shift that we're seeing. The other that we find really fascinating is, and we still know this because the data around physical purchasing hasn't declined, even when mobile commerce and digital commerce has accelerated and continues to climb. We're still seeing physical retail be a place of either closing deals of a lot of, try before you buy or, in there kind of like feeling, experiencing the tangible aspects of the shopping experience, but also still very much closing the deal too in physical retail. So yes, it has to be reimagined, and it is, but it's still a very important channel for our Gen Z and our younger generations.
I think you hit on something that I'm really interested in, and it's obviously been something that we've touched on and been thinking about for years, but it's the chasm that has existed between the offline and the online, or vice versa. If you start online and you end up kind of shifting and then picking kind of up where you left off, and being able to close that gap has always been kind of the holy grail, which is, okay, how can we, you know, collect all of this information, especially for big box retailer brands where maybe you don't own necessarily the point of purchase, or other industries that are in that same scenario. What is going on in terms of the expectation of, let's just stay on Gen Z for a minute, of, yes, we want to kind of potentially prefer to shop in store, but have they kind of lost that interest in making sure there's still a unified journey and the jump from online to offline is seamless? Because I imagine it's not necessarily about them wanting to just prefer to be in store at point of purchase. It's making sure that maybe the store is actually obviously the end game, but it still has to be super connected and super unified. Are you still seeing that in the trends?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that the idea of even omni-commerce or omni-retail is more alive and more real and more possible today than it's ever been before. And so there's, an expectation of the brands that we're dealing with that they have those channels really activated in a connected way for me. And they give you all the optionality that you could possibly give that makes sense for your brand. And I think it's a very important change that's taking place, because the expectation on the retailer or on the manufacturer and brand today to understand my behaviors across those channels and recognize that I'm not necessarily thinking in a channel way. I'm thinking about my experience with your brand or with your products. And that is what I need to have delivered against. So I think, and there is an expectation, because we know that the technology is there to be able to really track in usable, valuable ways for your engagement with the consumer across those channels, that you are tracking and understanding and making good use out of the data that you're able to collect on my behalf. And those are places too where you're opting into data collection. I'm part of a community. I'm electing to be part of your brand experience. And so the expectations around the exchange is much bigger. And from all of our research, we see that people don't really distinguish between the channel. They are thinking about a brand. And so whether it's because you've got your mobile device and it's operating with you at in this physical store environment, or because you are experiencing that brand through multiple channels and actions several times throughout a week or a day in your interactions, that you're merging in your mind, it's all that brand, it's all that retailer in your mind. It's not the differentiation of channels anymore. You're not distinguishing.
So how is that impacting retail media? Because I think that's another area where it historically, depending on what brand you're working with, there, even within the organization, tend to be different leaders, different opinions, different ways of attacking retail media when it comes to, you know, that side of the business. And then tying that in with customer experience, where commerce kind of sits in between those things, where you have to get the attention through retail media, smart targeting, you have to get people to buy in smart ways with personalized offers and things. And then you prove out the promise by going through customer experience, you know, activities and using all of those muscles. How is what you just talked about being impacted or impacting retail media in our space?
Well, in so many ways, if you've been in the space for a while, it's not very different than it was in terms of like trade relationships and trade spend between a manufacturer and a retailer. It's a new way of retailers obviously being able to monetize that captive audience, and the fact that there is data that is valuable data around that audience. It does push the retailer to make more from those assets and make sure that their assets that are going to be effectively working, because now they can be measured so that you have a better sense of how effective they are, and you can pick and choose what you think is right, given your brand and given the communications and the experience and engagement that you want to drive. I think it's an incredible time, quite honestly. We even see this in terms of, and this is the most important proof point, when you get into non-endemic brands, like how important some of these marketplaces have become in the minds of consumers, that if you are Royal Caribbean or Virgin Voyages, you think it's valuable to place ads, you know, in Amazon, when, you know, people are looking for, you know, a new camera or, you know, beach wear and resort wear and things like that. So I think the ability to now really see the retailer truly as a media is super exciting and important. But it is also important to have agencies that are looking and teams that are looking holistically at the spend so that the manufacturer is getting as much economic value out of these equations as, say, the retailer is, since the retailer's sort of whole business model can shift as they're able to monetize more in these ways. I think also we'll get into it in a bit, but that's also the importance of creativity. I think if we just look at all of this as an opportunity to just kind of push out content that becomes very programmatic and mm-hmm. doesn't think about the real opportunity of exploiting these assets that are out there in these retailer marketplaces for the betterment, again, of the engagement of the consumer and putting content out there that the consumer is going to really want to engage with that makes sense for your brand. It's a complete missed opportunity. And as we know, with all media and all channels that perform as media, there's not just, you know, what you can pay, but there's, you know, the owned, earned, shareable aspect of how we want to think about the content and the opportunity that comes from great content.
Totally. And we are blessed to work with some of the biggest brands in the world. So we're able to really get some rich experiences with some great partners, people that we can, you know, do really innovative things with every day. So we obviously have a myriad of listeners that are in different companies and in different positions. What can leaders and pros from large companies, like the ones that we work with day to day, learn from some of the disruptor brands as they evolve their playbooks? Because they're obviously playing with perhaps some of the same sets of muscles, but maybe a different deck of cards if you play that analogy out.
Well, first of all, I think we all need to be paying attention to who could be disrupting, even if it doesn't exist yet. Like what is the possibility mm-hmm. of a new brand somewhat coming out of nowhere, and oftentimes they are percolating in the background. They've been around a lot longer than we think they have, but all of a sudden something ignites them in usually a social platform like a TikTok, or, you know, a space where they're getting discovered, and then they're able to retarget and really add fuel to that fire. But I think that, I don't think there's a single brand on this planet and major enterprise-wide, you know, product that can't be disrupted. So that's mm-hmm. one, is to kind of like not think that you're just because you have years of equity or you're the go-to brand and the leader in a category that a disruptor brand isn't going to come out of nowhere. We oftentimes think of these brands as born in commerce, and they kind of have their own playbook. You know, they really are smart on, it's not about, they're not thinking in terms of building a funnel strategy. They're not spending time and money in just upper funnel activity. They're getting very close to the consumer quickly, to the moment of conversion and captivating somebody while they have their first moment of sort of interest and discovery, and how quickly they can try to turn that into conversion and then turn that into loyalty, and then just keep that, you know, virtual cycle going where they do start to create the sense of community around their brand very quickly. And then that sort of is a network effect where it amplifies from there. So it is very cool to actually watch even how they start to think about brand extension. So if you think about a Pink Stuff in the house cleaning space, and, you know, the interesting thing too there is you're going into spaces where there's a lot of search, there are a lot of memes, you know, there are a lot of, like, you know, hashtags that people follow, and there's already a huge group of influencers in this space. So, you know, it is ripe for disruption when, you know, and for a very quick kind of viral ability for these brands to be infectious and to grow very quickly. And while they're never going to be the size, and they certainly aren't overnight the size of some of our big players, they can take massive share away from those players. So I always say to big enterprise brands to think about, you know, a repackaging strategy sometimes, maybe playing a completely different go-to-market strategy through a DTC route or through a pure social commerce play. It could be even the brands that you already have just repackaged differently with a slightly different narrative and story around it that just appeals to an audience in a very different way. But you have to follow the playbook. You know, it's not just, you know, do one thing different. You have to think about all of the steps that follow that in terms of creating a sense of community, nurturing the community, speaking a different language, allowing the kind of influencer and creator community to have a different voice in the mix of how your brand gets built and gets expressed. You have a lot less control. But on the other side of that, you can have a lot of growth.
Yeah, and I think you hit on something that reminded me about the importance of just being really smart on how you're listening, both literally and figuratively, to what your customers want, who they're going to, why are they choosing one product over another or a brand over another, to be able to truly understand like the why behind what's going on. Obviously, that's something we've talked about a lot on this show, but one of the major currencies of being able to have the knowledge to be able to listen properly has always been, or at least in part has been, the cookie. And, you know, you hear a lot about the quote cookie crumbling, and the goalposts have seemingly moved a handful of times since, you know, cookieopolypse or whatever you want to call it is about to hit us. And here we are, it sounds like at least Google is planning to phase out those third-party cookies by the end of 24. And yeah, again, even though we've been hearing about this for a while, in an industry where, as I mentioned, personalization at scale, it's more important than ever. It feels like right now, many might not exactly be ready for such a seismic shift, knowing how important it is to build the relationship. And without that 1P data, what do you do? What should we be doing about this?
Well, I do think retail media is part of that answer and why it becomes more valuable. There is also the importance of experimenting yourself with DTC channels or DTC campaigns and things that are allowing you to go out there and build your community, it just like CRM. You know, one of the things I think about a lot in this moment is back to brilliant basics, but all done in new ways. So just thinking about kind of the basic fundamentals of how you build a relationship with the consumer, but then how do you do it in a way that is feels regenerated and revitalized and modernized? And then through, so it's, you know, CRM, building loyalty and loyalty programs in a different way. When you look at the Ultas and the Sephoras and Starbucks and some of our great mass loyalty programs at the heart, you know, even a lot of our retailers, you know, you can learn a lot in terms of what behavior do they benefit from, and then becomes endearing to their relationship and consumer's relationship with the brand. But where the, you know, a lot of this is about, again, back to the human-centered design or, you know, consumer centricity. It's back to consumers feeling like this is being done for me. This is being done to add value to me and to my life. This isn't about what you can get from me. And I think it really is that rebalancing of the equation. And so data is the same thing. I think when people are, we know this, are willing to give their data, it's really removing that inability to know and control your data. But when you are able to say yes to yes data in this context, yes, because the personalization on the other side is going to be worth it, I think we're going to get more valuable uses of data and more control over it, and actually ways that we're going to be able to enhance programs around it between the consumer and the brand, or the consumer and the retailer. So I think it's going to open up a ton of possibility. And again, it's creativity as the solve. You know, I think if we, it is pushing us to think and act differently and to design and devise programs that are, that have a different kind of outcome at the heart, one of capturing more understanding about consumers and then our ability to really agilely and quickly respond to it.
And you've been touching on something that I think is another good segue to something you've written recently about, and this idea of quantum commerce. And you hit on one of the pillars about creativity. Tell us more about what you mean by quantum commerce.
So Raja, who has been a longtime CMO of MasterCard, really coined the phrase of commerce, of quantum marketing a number of years ago, not that long ago, but, you know, within the last 5 years or so. And it really was speaking to the dimensionalization of marketing. And he was coming from a CMO's toolbox and empathy for someone in his role in, you know, massive companies today that have so many different KPIs and so many different requirements on them for what they're delivering for their organizations. And we thought that we're in an evolution now of commerce. When you look at sort of the phases that we've gone through in commerce maturity, that it doesn't just stop at this notion that we talked about earlier in terms of unifying the commerce channels or unifying, connecting commerce across all of your different channels, which we sort of in some ways was thinking, well, maybe that is the ultimate, you know, end goal for all things that we're trying to design for. But in actuality, there might be this next territory that we're really entering, especially with AI's entrance into this space across many of these different user cases and experiences. Is there this idea of quantum commerce happening right now? And can we start to get clear about what are the tools, knowledge, and skills that we need to think about that is really a quantum commerce marketer's methods? You know, who are we looking for in these roles? What do we need to train for? What do we need to upskill around? And then as an agency, how do we partner and build that capability for ourselves and for our clients to be able to deliver on this next wave where commerce is becoming more central to all things marketing and becoming critically important? Obviously, it always has been to the success of a company, but the way we're thinking about it, the way we're leveraging is less from just a tactical, how do we drive conversion and transaction, but much more into a strategic upfront way of thinking about everything from insights to channel strategies to go-to-market strategies, as we talked about, that really shift the way an organization is behaving.
So for those wanting to take the leap into quantum commerce, what are a few key principles that folks can keep in mind?
Well, I do think at the heart of it, there is this idea of embracing creativity. So again, back to notions of how sometimes we think about language and it kind of defines or, you know, ends up narrowing our action. Oftentimes when we talk about commerce, you think of it very transactionally. Yeah. You don't think about it necessarily informed or infused by emotion and insight in the same way. But now, as we've been talking, the data that is coming from this area, the mechanics and utility and functionality that are being built into all of these platforms, all these marketplaces, the tools that are there aren't there just to, again, programmatically or use algorithms to get you into transaction mode. It also allows for an enabling of technology into creativity. And it's just never been more exciting for a creative person to think about, okay, how do I utilize all of this capability, this technology capability that's there to do things for the consumer that were just never been possible before. Mm-hmm. We have a really great piece of work around Oreo codes where you simply scan the barcode on cartons of milk, any kind of milk that you could imagine that you could find.
I love that.
You get a promotion for Oreo cookies, because we know that nothing goes better than Oreos and milk. We know people have been buying all sorts of kinds of milk and that category is exploding, but the cookie category actually is a bit in decline. And so how do we kind of refresh on bringing these two favorites together again? That's enabled by AI. It's enabled by your mobile phone, but it is asking someone to do something, to get something. And in that interaction is an exchange of love between the consumer and the brand. So it's that creativity, I think, being infused into the space of commerce is very ripe for now and into the future. And I think it has to be part of everyone in this area's way that they're approaching things and thinking about it and their roles. The next one is having a generalist view, but when it comes to commerce. So recognizing that, again, there's a lot of different capability that is going to be essential and critical here. You need to build diverse teams, but you also need leadership that is going to be fluent across technology, media, creativity, and, you know, the retailer side of the equation, the manufacturer and brand side of the equation. It's going to take people who have really grown up in the space and have also kind of transcended these different roles. And then the last that we really lean into is recognizing the commerce tech stack and the myriad of partners that are playing here now, from the entertainment partners to the other channel partners to technology partners, the Adobes, the Salesforce, the Googles of this world. The partnership is really rich and exciting as well. And that is where the ability to be a systems integrator or to really bring the partnership and into a more collaborative space to, again, deliver for the consumer in ways that have never been possible before. So those are just three of the things that we're thinking about in terms of how this is really opening up in a exponential way the possibility for commerce.
So for those wanting to take the leap into quantum commerce, what are a few key principles that the folks can keep in mind?
Well, I do think at the heart of it, there is this idea of embracing creativity. So again, back to notions of how sometimes we think about language and it kind of defines or, you know, ends up narrowing our action. Oftentimes when we talk about commerce, you think of it very transactionally. Yeah. You don't think about it necessarily informed or infused by emotion and insight in the same way. But now, as we've been talking, the data that is coming from this area, the mechanics and utility and functionality that are being built into all of these platforms, all these marketplaces, the tools that are there aren't there just to, again, programmatically or use algorithms to get you into transaction mode. It also allows for an enabling of technology into creativity. And it's just never been more exciting for a creative person to think about, okay, how do I utilize all of this capability, this technology capability that's there to do things for the consumer that were just never been possible before. Mm-hmm. We have a really great piece of work around Oreo codes where you simply scan the barcode on cartons of milk, any kind of milk that you could imagine that you could find. You get a promotion for Oreo cookies because we know that nothing goes better than Oreos and milk. We know people have been buying all sorts of kinds of milk and that category is exploding, but the cookie category actually is a bit in decline. And so how do we kind of refresh on bringing these two favorites together again? That's enabled by AI. It's enabled by your mobile phone, but it is asking someone to do something to get something. And in that interaction is an exchange of love between the consumer and the brand. So it's that creativity, I think, being infused into the space of commerce is very ripe for now and into the future. And I think it has to be part of everyone in this area's way that they're approaching things and thinking about it and their roles. The next one is having a generalist view, but when it comes to commerce. So recognizing that, again, there's a lot of different capability that is going to be essential and critical here. You need to build diverse teams, but you also need leadership that is going to be fluent across technology, media, creativity, and, you know, the retailer side of the equation, the manufacturer and brand side of the equation. It's going to take people who have really grown up in the space and have also kind of transcended these different roles. And then the last that we really lean into is recognizing the commerce tech stack and the myriad of partners that are playing here now, from the entertainment partners to the other channel partners to technology partners, the Adobes, the Salesforce, the Googles of this world. The partnership is really rich and exciting as well. And that is where the ability to be a systems integrator or to really bring the partnership and into a more collaborative space to, again, deliver for the consumer in ways that have never been possible before. So those are just three of the things that we're thinking about in terms of how this is really opening up in a exponential way the possibility for commerce.
That's amazing. And I know a lot of these topics you've written about at length, and we have a couple of the links there set up for us on our podcast show notes. So please definitely, for those that haven't read those, you should definitely join us and listen into that and watch and read all the great things that Beth Ann has shared with us. Before we wrap up, as we do, and for those that have listened to the show before, they are used to this trend, but at the end of the show, we always kind of pivot away from our topic du jour and hear a little bit more about what keeps you busy. What are your habits? What do you like? What things are you interested in? And you shared with me something really interesting about an animal that you love. Talk about that and what made you really interested.
Well, it's going to sound like a complete non sequitur from our conversation. But when we talk about things that are like sort of fun that you don't know about each other, and it is always fun to kind of go a little bit deeper and discover things. Since being a kid, and I don't know if it comes from the Bar books that maybe some people are familiar with, but I was absolutely for a very long time obsessed, more Bar than Dumbo, but I'll take them all. But I've been like, yes, very passionate about elephants. from a very young age. And so when I just can't get enough of, some people are those, you know, cute cats or cute dog videos. I really love watching elephants in their habitat in sanctuaries that are, you know, being sometimes protected or they've gotten away from their tribe. I just love learning about their, you know, the way that they have a tribalism and they care for each other, how they learn, their intellect that they bring, you know, to the world, and just like their, the fact that they are such giant, massive creatures, mm-hmm. but at the same time, such gentle, loving animals that are just, I find them so incredibly fascinating. I find it so sad, people who have, you know, harmed them over the years, but I have this extraordinary elephant collection, you know, from Motif to all different, not live, although yeah, well, I, yes, I am, I have the adopted elephant program where I do sponsor elephants in different parts of the world, but yeah, but
I didn't, but know more you importantly, could even do that.
Yes, you can do that. We can drop that link there as well. But
yes, we sure can. Yeah,
it's just like every, I love like a ceramic and glass and all kinds of different artists, variations and paintings of them. Every time I look over at one of my elephant prints or elephant in any form, I just, it just sort of makes me happy.
That's awesome. Have you ever gotten like close enough up to one to touch one or interact with one in person, or is it more from afar?
I have. No, I have in Sri Lanka and in Africa. So I've definitely had a few awesome. Lovely personal moments with them as well. And it, you really realize when you're in person with them, just how enormous they are. And, but at the same time, still like very, you know, you just get this gentle, I know that they can be, you know, not gentle all the time, but you just get, you get a feel from them, a vibe from them that is, you know, pretty, pretty chill and spectacular and calming.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for sharing that. And thank you for all the brilliance that you bring every day. And it's certainly to this episode of the show as well. We really appreciate your time. We know you're swamped and busy doing all the great things you do. So thanks for carving out a few minutes for us.
Well, Nick, thank you very much for inviting me to come on and having this good conversation together. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Our pleasure, Beth Ann. We'll talk again soon. And thanks to you all for listening to Human Centered as well. To learn more about VML's CX practice and our approach to the work, you can check us out online at vml.com. We'd also love to hear your feedback on the show. Give us a rating and offer up your thoughts wherever you listen to your podcasts, including Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon, and more. Have a topic idea or just want to drop us a line? You can connect with me on X at Nick Brunker is my handle, or just shoot us an email. The address is humancentered@vml.com. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.